Today, we're talking to Brendan Cody Kenny, co-founder at Seema, about leadership lessons he's learned as a co-founder, the future of Gen AI code, and more. You're listening to Joel Beasley, Modern CTO.
I'm sure you heard the episode that we did with Matt, right?
Yep.
Nice. So you're in Dublin today?
Dublin, Ireland, yep.
How'd you meet Matt? If you're in Dublin, how'd you meet Matt?
Yeah, I got we connected online. There was a website, angel.co, and he was looking for computer people, and I was looking for commercialization people, basically business folk. And that's how we got started chatting, and we were both really interested in software and how to, improve the way people build software and change software. So we went from there and built a team, built a company.
I don't know about that. Is that a match.com for business?
It was something like that. It was kind of like LinkedIn, but for startups. I think they kind of pivoted a couple of times. They were trying to get investors to invest in startups at one point, as far as I remember. But at the time, yeah, it kind of felt like a LinkedIn for startups.
So did Matt post and he said, hey, this is the problem I'm solving. I'm looking for people with expertise in this area. Or how did that work?
Pretty much exactly that. Yeah. Matt had posted looking for nerds. Yeah. And I was looking for business folk who were interested in the same problem. And we got chatting. So that was great. Yeah. Because previously I'd been doing, I was coming out of academia, looking for my next move, something. I'd done a lot of study on, automated software automation. I was trying to automatically improve the performance of software. And, I'd done a bunch of research at that stage, and I kind of got really interested in commercialization. So I was looking around for people who knew about that sort of thing and who could, do things like build teams and look for investment and all that kind of business side of things that I was curious about for sure and interested, but maybe I had more technical skills at the time.
Yeah. I've had a number of conversations where the companies that do really well are the companies that have multiple co-founders that each have strengths in specific areas. So I think that's a good sign. Tell me about this automatically improving software. Is it just a GPT instance that you instruct? You're like, you are the best software engineer on earth. Go make this code base better.
That sounds good. No, at the time it was the same goal, right? We wanted, the big idea was that you could automatically improve software. And the way we were trying to do it at the time is you would generate variants of the software, kind of mutants of the software. And provided you could measure which ones were better than others, you could iteratively improve the software. And so that was the idea. And so it was very costly to run. I would run this thing for a week, run it over the weekend, that sort of thing. And I, at one point I had like 40 computers working together to try and do this, generating all these mutants. And the idea that is that the software would improve eventually. And it kind of relies on you being able to test the software. So you kind of, you need to have a good test suite. You need to make sure that the code doesn't break. If you want a faster program using this method, you'll basically get back an empty program that does nothing. It's very fast, of course, but so you have to make sure it still works. It still does what you wanted it to do. So that was kind of the big idea. And what's interesting is, at the time we really had no idea that all this Gen AI, GPT stuff would come along. But the way we were making the mutants of the programs back then was really primitive. Like we would make a change and the code wouldn't even compile. It would just break it and you would just throw it out. And it was a lot of trial and error. So these GPT systems are really powerful at changing code. You can probably, what would have taken a weekend back then, you could probably ask one of these AI systems, like, here's what we're starting with. Give us a variant of this that you think is more performant. And in one or two steps, or maybe 10 steps, not thousands anyway, you probably would have something that was an improvement. So it'd be very interesting to revisit that research and, you know, and I can only assume it's having a huge impact on that research field today.
I want to talk a little bit about the partnership with you and Matt. I'm definitely going to tell people there's a match.com for entrepreneurs. what's much. One piece of advice, or the most important piece of advice, when picking a partner and starting a new business together?
Yeah. I mean, it should be fun, right? And you should be able to work together. You know, if you've got that weird feeling about someone where you don't trust each other or something like that, I think this is a multi-year journey you're on. And so you kind of need to be able to work together and trust each other. So I think that really comes first.
What was the dating process like?
we were emails back and forth and having calls, introducing some of our friends to each other and people that we were already working with. There was a lot of that. Matt came over to Ireland to visit and we went and spoke to people here. And, I went over to the States with Matt and spoke to a bunch of people there when we were forming the initial team and trying to get people together. So that's pretty much, yeah. I mean, it all started with just a message on a chat app, ironically enough. But yeah, it's worked. I mean, there's certainly been times where you're like, this is wild. Will this ever work? And then, you know, you just never know what happens next. So I think keeping an open mind and willing to give it a shot. A lot of people, yeah, I guess there's plenty of worry about, like, will this work? And I don't know. I seem to hear from a bunch of technical friends, like, okay, if you build it, you know, you might get ripped off or whatever. But I think the chances of that
That's
are not.
Fear. That's
yeah,
fear.
Yeah, exactly.
Are you kidding me? Do you know, people are having to do something to exist right now. They have something that they're doing to exist. They're going to have to stop doing that and start doing something entirely new.
Sure.
And it's like, I've never been too scared of people stealing things in that regard.
Right.
If totally. Anything, when I see new stuff comes along that solves a huge problem, I'm like, great, another problem I don't have to solve. I can just throw money at it. You know, I can just buy the solution versus trying to build my own compliance software internally and you know, monitor the code bases. That's one of the things that looked really interesting to me about what you guys were doing.
Sure. Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Having that focus as well is super important on what's important to you. So yeah, buying in these tools to help you manage all of this change will definitely be a big part of it. I think the same way, I mean, it's kind of analogous to the way that open source is used now in private industry, right? There are plenty of tools and we spend a lot of time, we actually have tooling that we've been working on before we started on this AI detection for understanding your open source footprint, if you like, all the dependencies, all the way down the dependency tree that you use. So in a similar way, if you measure and track your open source movement, that has kind of enabled open source in private industry. I kind of think it's going to be similar. It's going to play out similar that if you're going to use open source, you have these checks and balances. And similarly, if you're going to use AI to help in your SDLT, in your software development, there'll be similar tooling to help with that. And so we're working on that.
Help me close a gap in my knowledge. And Matt was the guy working on like CTO dashboards and things like that. Is that correct?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely, Matt.
Okay. Because I had your site pulled up real quick. When I loaded the site, it's like manage the risk and capture benefits of Gen AI and the SDLC. And I'm like, I'm not in like a parallel universe split. There right. was a, right? Yeah. You're the yeah. guy I think you are. Okay.
Absolutely. Yes. Same folk. Yeah.
Well, tell me about the progression since my conversation with Matt.
Yeah. So things move quickly at Seema, right? There's a lot of great sense of adventure. And so maybe the change you've seen is because of that, right? So what Seema does is we help people have conversations about software and we kind of bridge the gap between highly technical people and more business oriented people. So a lot of what we do is analyzing the details of software and bringing insights to the surface so people can have a conversation about the software. And a lot of what we've done previously is around code quality, team skills, process analysis, all of this sort of stuff based on the code base and the history of the code base. And so what we're doing recently is we are extending our suite of analysis tools to cover AI monitoring and detection and contextualizing that for business leaders.
So if I'm like IBM or even a more medium-sized company, and I want to deploy, I could deploy this system across, hook it into my GitHub Enterprise or whatever my version control system is. I could say, hey, I want to be notified if people start integrating generative AI into my projects across my whole company. You guys could deal with that?
Yeah, absolutely. So we keep an eye on the code base as it evolves and detect when we think AI is being used to write the code. And I mean, that's basically it. The risk is, I guess there's two risks with all this AI stuff. One risk is that you're not using it enough. The idea that your developers now have kind of access to an intern, kind of your development team is almost doubled if people are using it a lot, where each developer has their own intern that they can talk to and discuss and work with, pair programming style. So that's one risk, is not using enough. And then if you do use it that much, you need to keep an eye on how it's being used. You want it to be kind of symbiotic, where people are working together with these tools rather than it being a crutch where you ask a question and it does your homework, this sort of thing, and you don't learn anything.
So if I'm slow to respond, it's because there's a lot happening right now with AI, right? I'm learning. So I just got involved with a decentralized AI project called Morpheus just to explore. It was at the intersection of decentralized AI and cryptocurrencies or crypto. And I said, okay, well, this is an interesting project. I knew a couple people in person that were involved with the project. And I said, these are two areas where I know I have knowledge gaps. So my background is building all these softwares and selling them, then starting the podcast 7 years ago. And then 4 or 5 years ago, this became my full-time gig. So I haven't been hands on the keyboard all day for almost 5 years now. So I kind of took a step back, and now I'm, you know, after a 17-year stretch of never missing a day of programming, essentially.
Wow.
So there's a gap in my knowledge. Like usually if I was going to go sit down and build some software, I imagine it as like code. But right. What I'm seeing is a lot of these things is like they'll take an LLM and then they'll tell it a bunch of stuff. Like they'll just talk to it like it's a person.
Right.
And I'm like, that's the thing. How do you ensure the consistency of the output?
Yeah.
And then this creates all the issues that come along with LLMs. So I'm in the stage right now of learning, trying to understand how those things happen.
Sure.
Do you write tests? Because you mentioned Test Suite earlier, which is what I was interested in.
Yeah, you absolutely have to test what comes out of this thing. And so, I mean, there's a lot of ways of generating code. There's been plenty of sort of WYSIWYG things that will help you configure code and generate code. And there's this whole no code movement as well. And it is mostly, as far as I know, deterministic. You ask it the same thing today and tomorrow, it gives you back the exact same thing. And you're totally right. You asked the same question today and you slightly word it different. Even if you don't word it differently, you'll probably get something slightly different back tomorrow. So in that world where people are just creating code and the cost of creating code is a hell of a lot cheaper in terms of time, people's time, you know, you can have two or three different implementations of the same thing. Like it's really crucial to be able to test the difference there and find out, well, which is the one I'm going to go with, which one is more or less secure, which one's more performant, which one has bugs. It can be written in different paradigms as well, different languages, right? All of that becomes like open to testing. And, you know, there's a whole lot of barriers between these languages. You'll find that a lot of these languages and these ecosystems, a lot of people work in one or the other, and things are implemented a certain way in certain areas. And there is a kind of an incumbent library for, you know, there's kind of like one main way of doing it in each of these libraries. So all those barriers, you know, it becomes really easy to translate between these different languages. So in that environment where it's just so easy, instead of you coding for 2 hours a day on, you know, 2 hours on a specific problem, you can spend a good hour coming up with several different implementations. And basically, humans only have a certain amount of bandwidth to fit all of that, you know, read all this code. So being able to have test tools to discern between these different versions of the program, I think will really be important. So we'll swing from all the focus being on the code and within the implementation. I'm kind of wondering, will some of the focus swing back to more DevOps, testing, runtime, environment, observability, all this stuff that's, you know, it's already well underway and kind of the industrialization of the SDLC. That's the way I think about it, where there's a lot of, it seems like there's a lot of work being done in that area. And so I think that will become even more of a focus for engineering teams.
Are you scared of this stuff? Or are you excited about it?
I'm pretty excited. Yeah. I mean, just the sheer adventure. I mean, for everybody out there to be able to learn so much. I mean, that's just incredible, right? That you can travel so far with these things. Yeah, no, I'm optimistic about it because it is, well, for now anyway, it's a really powerful tool for managing information and getting at information. So that's really incredible. I guess it'll get pretty scary when we plug it into the physical world. I think there's a long way to go to like plug it into data and plug it into the context. So like the SDLC or, you know, your daily workflow, it's available in some places, but it's not exactly like plugged in. It doesn't have access to like all of our information yet.
Yeah. Well, there's plenty of companies that are building those APIs. That's what they're doing. You know, they're doing this, right? Companies are building their own language models and giving it all of its data. They're saying, here's all of our data. Here's complete access to all of our storage vaults. And then they're trying to teach it and talk it to it.
Yeah. I mean, that's, every time I read, you know, come up with some idea about the future, I read about some company doing it the next day. So yeah, it's the pace of development is astounding. But yeah, I mean, I'm very interested in that because it just gives you access to so much stuff. There's just so much stuff out there to learn. I guess when it plugs into the physical world, that'll be, when you're automating robots that can have kind of a physical impact on the world. That's something I know less about. But
they're going to outnumber us 10 to 1 pretty soon here. I want to steer the conversation back to technology leaders. So technology leaders, people who are growing and advancing their career, they're the ones that listen to this show to learn from other tech leaders what's coming around the corner, how to grow, how to become better and improve. This obviously is really interesting, the tools that you're making that's going to help you monitor your code base and see when Gen AI is included. So that way the newest employees don't just run wild with some technology in your project that you don't know how it got there, right? But AI and generative AI as a whole, how should these technology leaders look at it? Should they be scared of it? Should they be happy about it? What's the response?
I definitely think it's a good thing and should definitely be happy about it. Like I mentioned earlier, you know, if you think about your team size doubling, now everybody's got their own personal tutor, their own intern to talk to. Doing it in the right way, you know, if somebody's just going to make this system do all their work and they're going to copy and paste it without any oversight, that would be clearly a bad thing. You can also spend a lot of time back and forth with these systems and not actually get anywhere. Now, arguably that happens quite often anyway when you're programming. You know, you get blocked. But these systems, yeah, I mean, the more senior you are, you can probably move faster with these systems. But as well, for junior folk, being able to unblock people, I think, you can drop an error message into one of these systems and it'll instantly tell you a couple of things that it could be. And, you could spend a couple of hours. So I think it's, from what I've seen, it just looks like it's going to be a really powerful addition to a software developer's toolkit.
I saw an article the other day called The Death of Stack Overflow.
Oh, yeah.
Can you just imagine that's 99% of what people use Stack Overflow for? I have this problem. What do I do? And then other people yell at you. And then some very few people give you helpful responses.
Yeah.
That's gone now. Now you've got the AI tool. You don't need Stack Overflow.
That does sound like a possibility. It's been a while since I've been on Stack Overflow.
Right. Usually people are on early in their career to get help from other people who know what they're doing.
Mm-hmm. I still, you know, even though I've been, you know, programming for a long time, I still use Stack Overflow to get, you know, there's always some command that you forgot how it works or some syntax thing. So all of that, yeah, you're totally right, goes away or becomes just way more accessible, just easier to work with. But I would see that as a good thing overall from a engineering leadership perspective, right? It sort of supercharges things. It makes things more dynamic. You know, your entire team can spend more time thinking rather than working on syntax issues or kind of minuscule bugs. So hopefully your entire engineering department can move up one layer of abstraction, and the ability to modify code and write code and move code around, you know, it just becomes way, way faster.
I'm curious about companies. Have you seen companies using large language models privately and connecting them to their own information to work with those large language models?
I haven't seen a lot of that. It okay. takes a reasonable amount of work to get these. I've played around with it a bit. There was one project called Private GPT, and you can run this sort of stuff. You can run it locally. It's incredibly slow, but you can download and you can train these things on your own data sets. But it's a reasonable amount of work to get it plugged in. I think, you know, we're right in the middle of it. Like you said, there's a lot of companies giving huge amounts of data to these systems. And so, yeah, I think that's, you know, that is sort of a barrier to entry. I think there'll be a lot of startups who will be able to provide these tools without every single company out there having to kind of build their own private LLM. But if you have a very specific use case, of course, you'll be able to build your own personal one if you need it. I think that's kind of the thing. I mean, not many people run their own email server anymore. It's kind of easier to get it as a service.
That is true. Yeah. I was curious if you, because of the way these language models work with you telling it to do things through prompting, it converting that information into vectors and then storing it like that. If these systems can be trained, like for example, there's a popular open one called Llama. Right?
Right.
How do I know that Llama instance, when it was built, the model that they're going to release everybody, hasn't been given instructions to pass anything that looks like a credit card number back to some server that they have? You know, how do we know that they haven't embedded or taught the model to do something nefarious?
Yeah, I mean, that's a great question. That's a, yeah, pretty big concern. That same question can be applied to software right now. So you download a binary. There are ways of testing for, you know, basically network access. We still have control over that. So all of that kind of, all of our kind of network and system security still is highly relevant for these systems as well. And I guess to your point, you can't really look inside these systems and read the code. They're kind of opaque boxes in a way. And so, yeah, I mean, in that scenario, being able to test these things externally becomes even more important. And I think all the tools that, you know, handle security right now will similarly can be applied to this problem.
As a co-founder, what are you learning right now?
Yeah, I'm learning all the time from the people I work with. That's always a new thing. I'm certainly learning more about all these GPT systems. I continue to learn about distributed systems and software in general. There's always something new. There's always, you learn to program and you learn patterns and how to build software, but when to use these patterns and when is the right time to use a certain architecture, that's still something you can learn from, learn about. So I'm still learning about that. I'm still learning a lot about people, right? It's been great working with Matt because he's a extrovert in a way. You know, he's very outgoing. So that I definitely enjoy working with him and the sheer energy he brings. And then as well, you know, working on this new AI detection tool, right? There's a lot of people applying AI to various tasks, various problems. And I don't know that there's as many people doing what we're doing in terms of like, is your software team using AI? How is AI influencing the software you write? And so that's been very interesting. We've run a bunch of experiments and we find very counterintuitive results. So for example, today we found that one of the GPT systems, on average, humans have better grammar and better spelling, on average, but the variability is a lot higher. So, and it might be dependent on the code base that we tested as well, but you know, some people have really, really strong grammar, better than any of these GPT systems, and some people don't. So it might be person to person, team to team. There's a hell of a lot of variability there. And what we're seeing is that these GPT systems, at least on that measure, are highly consistent. They have a certain level of grammar and spelling. And that doesn't seem to vary wildly in comparison to the human side of things.
It's interesting because there's an interesting thought about effort and energy. You can communicate at different levels to different people, and how you communicate, I believe, directly corresponds to how much energy it takes to communicate, right? So you can have people that are, let's say, level 8 communicators that when they're doing a Git commit or whatnot, they might just be level 3 because they're exhausted and had a end of the day. But the GPT systems are more likely to be stable, right?
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. Yeah, they don't need sleep. That's a significant advantage.
And they can work together. So.
Right. Yeah, when these things get kind of networked together, make for very interesting meetings, right? You've got double the number of voices in the room.
Yeah. What's the call to action? Do people go and they sign up and they take a look at it? How do you get people started?
Yeah, absolutely. Happy to chat with anyone interested. We can organize pilots and demos. Absolutely. We'd be, myself and Matt, more than happy to talk with anybody. Shoot us a message, find us on LinkedIn, go check out our website, seemasoftware.com, all of that.
I'm on the website right now. If I do the comprehensive code base scan, what is that going to tell me?
That is going to tell you about your code quality. It's going to tell you about your team. It's going to tell you about process. It'll tell you about security. It'll tell you about your open source, all your open source dependencies. And so that's it in a nutshell in terms of what that. And so our AI detection is also being added as another module to that. So if you sign up for a code base scan, you know, a lot of investors, when they're investing in a company or buying a company, rely heavily on our code base scans to get really up to speed. You know, you want to know what you're buying. You want to know what you're investing in. And we also have CTOs who use those tools, you know, to get through their first 90 days and get through it in 30 days, this sort of thing. So you can move very quickly. I think there's a hell of a lot, you know, the value sort of grows exponentially with this system, with the more code and the larger the code base, the larger the team, the bigger the organization, the more valuable these tools are, because it's so hard to get a handle on who knows what, who are the experts in what parts of the code base, you know, where's the risk in there, where really needs attention, and what parts of it are good as well. You know, that's really important. So we, you know, that's our code base scan, is surfacing all that information about the engineering function in an organization. So it's kind of analogous to, you know, a CFO coming in and reviewing the accounts, looking at the books. Similarly, a CTO or technical leader or an investor in a company wants to know what they're getting. They want to see and have a summary of what's actually in the software.
Well, it's definitely interesting to watch your company and you and Matt's journey mature. Because I like where it's headed. I think the idea of an AI code monitor product, the Gen AI compliance tracker, that's going to be real big as these regulations, whether or not the regulations make sense or not is irrelevant. They still are government regulations nonetheless. So being able to be aware of what they are and your level of compliance is important. And then I also think I like the CTO aspect. CTO getting up to speed in 30 days instead of 90 days by understanding what's going on, and the code base scans and all of it. So you guys have like a 3 or 4 things going on right now that all seem to have a very similar set of like core tools. So I'm curious to see like which one's going to take off the most for you guys.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, what we're seeing is that all of these tools, a lot of the time we run all of them as well. Like a code base scan will encompass all of these different modules and all these different aspects, all these different ways of thinking about your software, your software function, basically. So it's kind of, we try to be very broad.
Yeah, but this has been great meeting you, Brennan. We made a podcast. How do you feel?
Great. Yeah, thanks for that, Joel. That was fun. That was exciting.
Thank you so much for listening. And if you found this episode useful, please share it with a friend or a colleague who you think would get value from it. And if you have topics that you'd like to hear discussed on the podcast, either add me on LinkedIn or send me an email, joel@moderncto.io. Every time I get an email or LinkedIn message, it absolutely makes my day and inspires me to keep going.